Hello, this is Emmanuel Faber, the chair of the ISSB. I'm here with our vice chair, Jindong Hua. Regular listeners would note that my colleague Sue would usually host this podcast with me. She's not able to join us this month, and she'll be back. In the meantime, it's a great opportunity to catch up also with you, Jindong, and hear about your key areas of focus as a vice chair, which is our capacity building program. So we are in New York City. That's our first meeting in the U.S. as a board. Jindong, how was the week for you?
Hi, Emmanuel. Hi, listeners. It definitely has been a very fantastic week. New York is a great reminder that finance and capital market play a central role in connecting global savings to investment. And what better place can you have in being at the biggest financial center in the world? We have so many activities and meetings that we will go through. But also, Emmanuel, this is a very interesting time in the United States. We've heard a lot about anticipation for the US SEC climate ruling, and also that demand from investors for sustainability-related information remains high, regardless of incoming regulation. We also know that many US companies will also be subject to the requirement coming out of the CSRD based on European sustainability reporting standards, as well as in other jurisdictions that are currently defining their regulatory framework for sustainability-related disclosures. So there was strong interest in how we've delivered a high degree of alignment around our climate-related disclosure requirements and how we've introduced interoperability mechanisms. Overall, I've heard a lot of momentum behind our work, with companies choosing to voluntarily adopt the ISSB standards, responding to investor demands, and in the knowledge that the same investor focus of the SEC's work will likely deliver synergies and help streamline their reporting efforts across a number of jurisdictions. So, Emmanuel, we've met with some of the IFRS corporate champions, with IFRS Sustainability Alliance members and registrants in our FSA credentials, and participated in roundtables with both corporates and investors. But the main highlight was our IFRS Sustainability Symposium. Emmanuel, how was that for you?
Thank you, Jindong. Yeah, I think it was a highlight of the week, really. It was great to meet with our stakeholders, many from the US, but also from outside, learn more about their focus, how they're engaging with the ISSB standards. We had over 1,000 delegates in person and online from over 50 jurisdictions around the world, which shows the level of interest in the matter that we're working on. It was great to hear from Brian Monian of Bank of America. His key message is that we cannot replace the alphabet soup of voluntary initiatives, which we have addressed through the ISSB, with now the risk of an alphabet soup of regulatory requirements, which actually echoed this conversation I had in Davos with Gillian Tett about the tipping point of either direction in the coming 18 months. Brian gave a strong call to CEOs to support the ISSB work, to help demonstrate to also regulators that it is possible to design straightforward, standardized metrics across jurisdictions, and that companies should consider adoption of the ISSB standards, to use his word, as a no-regrets strategy, even here in particular in the US. We certainly heard diverse views. It was, you know, heartening. The focus is on how we can do sustainability disclosure better, not why or if. We heard from investors specific examples of how they're using sustainability-related information to inform their investment decisions. We heard from companies about how they're preparing for the ISSB standards, but also a plea for them to us and our colleagues in jurisdictions to reduce the risk of that duplication and address the disclosure's burden through optimum interoperability. We also heard from regulators in Brazil and Japan, as well as from the CEO of the World Federation of Exchanges and the chair of IOSCO, about regulatory developments and progress in this space. We finished with a very inspiring call to action from Andrew Rivers, the former chair and CEO of Dow, now a board member of Saudi Aramco, the largest company in the world, and also on the other side of the transition away from fossil energy, Lucent Motors, which is a big and fast-growing EV company. And so Andrew was ideally placed to explain how companies such as these ones are addressing the transition. So it was overall, I think, a seminal discussion here in the US about some of these pressing topics that companies would like to find ways to discuss with their investors, and definitely showing how much our standards can be a passport to do that in so many places around the world. You, Jingdong, gave also an update at the symposium about the work that the ISSB is doing to help others implement the ISSB standards. It's absolutely core to your particular vice chair position to engineer our capacity building programs and other. Can you maybe share some highlights that you've shared yesterday?
Absolutely, Emmanuel. Indeed, the objectives of our ISSB standard is to introduce a single global language on sustainability disclosure, a global baseline that everybody will understand, that will bring more accountability, comparability, and efficiency to capital market. And therefore, we want preparers and companies, whether you're listed in New York or in Johannesburg, your Lagos, Tokyo, Jakarta, everybody should feel that they are supported in their journey towards being ready to adopt our standard. And recognizing that in emerging economies and developing countries, they probably need additional help given the stage of readiness. And therefore, as a foundation, we not only committed to developing this high standard, high quality global baseline, but also to support its adoption through a capacity building program. We are working with a number of growing global partners, and now 35 and counting, in terms of developing education material, delivering lectures and knowledge base. So quite a number of things going on, and I'll just mention a couple of those. For example, we are working with the United Nations Sustainable Stock Exchange Initiative. This initiative is very interesting because stock exchanges are uniquely positioned to promote best practices. And through this initiative, we can conduct training sessions and reach members of stock exchanges and companies in a very efficient way. So far, we have conducted sessions where 1,700 participants have benefited from those trainings. They come from Ireland, Singapore, Australia, and Saudi Arabia. And we have nine jurisdictions where we're going to do the same thing very soon. Another exciting channel for bring awareness and get training is our Knowledge Hub. So this is a resource available free to everyone, and it's already on our website. So there we have education materials created by our technical staff, but we also curate third-party materials which we think are helpful to preparers. So far we already have over 130 pieces of third-party material in addition to our own education resources. Now, to the Global South, another critical set of partners would be the multilateral development banks, including the World Bank, the Asian Development Bank, the African Bank. Collectively, they provide over $200 billion of investment in emerging and developing countries. And we're also very aligned in bringing transparent financial market to those economies to better catalyze private investment into those jurisdictions. So working together, we will be able to reach more companies and regulators in developing countries. For example, in Africa, we are working with Pan-Africa Federation of Accountants to create a comprehensive strategy reached over 125,000 accountants that are critical in companies, and for that matter, in auditors, in regulators, in terms of their readiness in using our standard. Another critical partner we have is CDP. As you know, CDP has close to 20,000 companies in their membership, and we have agreed to work together to promote early voluntary adoption by the companies. But in addition, we are working together in providing training to their members, especially focus on their members in developing economies. For example, in China, probably a lot of people don't realize this, that although in CDP, the biggest membership comes from the United States, there are over 2,700 Chinese companies also on CDP membership. And therefore, working together, just China's example, will really give us a very substantive reach to prepare. Last example, certainly not the least, in Southeast Asia, the GRI standards have been widely used. So recognizing that reality, we are collaborating GRI, created this sustainability innovation lab in ASEAN countries, where we will find efficient ways of introducing the ISSB standard in collaboration with GRI, so that companies already reporting under GRI standard will have an easier time migrating to ISSB standards. So overall, we have already started a lot of activities, but more to come. So access our knowledge hub, reach out to our capacity building staff if you need help, whether you are from a developed country economy or from the global south. We look forward to working with you in providing all the support you need. So, Emmanuel, in addition to capacity building, we also launched a preview of our inaugural jurisdictional guide. What is that document and why have we published it?
Well, first of all, thank you. Maybe, that's an opportunity for me to just extend a big thanks to you and to all the capacity building team. I realize talking to so many people around the world that they appreciate how much it is important that we just not stop at just standard setting. But in these initial moments of establishing the space and our language, it's critical that we, as you just described in so many ways, ensuring that there is support for that implementation and the learning of that language in a very proportionate way for those jurisdictions and those market participants that particularly needed that. So big thank you. And of course, that will be an ongoing process for several years, and on which, by the way, we are also going to cooperate with IOSCO and others and their membership. In a way, the preview of our inaugural jurisdictional guide that we launched yesterday is another facet of that work. And I was just mentioning IOSCO because IOSCO was, at the endorsement announcement in July, announcing as well that this guide would be soon published in order to ensure that jurisdictions have an appropriate guidance and support from us as they embark in the journey for adoption. We are here to ensure that there is a globally consistent and comparable sustainability-related disclosures system for capital markets. And these documents will support regulators as they design and plan their journey to adopt or use the ISSB standards. It will help us as well to provide transparency to capital market stakeholders about the features of approaches that jurisdictions are taking to adopt or otherwise use our standards. To help actually with stakeholders' awareness of how jurisdictions progress on that journey, we've also this week made public on our website a first inaugural list of ongoing and completed jurisdictional public consultations about their projects. We will continue to engage with jurisdictions with a view to publish the jurisdictional guide itself in the first half of this year. While we don't anticipate any significant change to the preview, the inaugural guide may include additional information as we continue our discussions. And that takes us to our board meeting this week. We had two sessions. Firstly, that was about our future work plan. And maybe, Jindong, can I ask you to share some of your key takeaways from that discussion?
Yes, Emmanuel. As our audience would know, that since November, we have been discussing feedback received via our agenda consultation. So today was the first time we've taken decisions based on that feedback. So we discussed and agreed to the criteria that we will use when determining how to prioritize potential projects in our next two-year work plan. We agreed to largely proceed with the criteria as proposed in the request for information, but amended one of the criteria to highlight the importance of interactions between potential ISSB projects and projects of other relevant standard setters. The range and subjectivity of criteria means that assessing the priority of potential projects requires judgment. Nonetheless, these criteria are vital guiding principles as we agree on our future work plan in upcoming board meetings. So I encourage stakeholders interested in this topic to read the thoughtful paper that staff put together that detailed the feedback we received and why they recommend we retain the 7 criteria set out in our request for information paper. Now that we have made decisions on the criteria, we will use a criteria to assess the priority of projects that we will add to our next work plan. In the coming months, we will discuss and decide on the strategic direction and balance of the ISSB's activities, and then the new projects to be added to the work plan. And we also had an interesting conversation about educational material on the concept of materiality in the context of the ISSB standards. So, Emmanuel, why was this an important discussion for the board to have?
Well, it was, I think, also in relation to one aspect of the discussion that we had and the decision we made about our criteria, and that's about interoperability. The staff had a proposal that interoperability being foundational, embedded in the way we set standards, we did not need that to be in the paper as a criteria. We amended this by ensuring that it would, as you highlighted. And this is also the reason why the materiality discussion in terms of educational material was important. One example, and why it is timely, is that, as many would know, the ESRS, on which preparers in Europe are currently starting to embed in their work plan for this year, to be able to report on the 2024 data, those ESRS incorporate the definition of investor materiality that we are using in ESRS 1. And therefore, it's very important that as they consider the interoperability with the ISSB standards, for ESRS, for instance, that there is a very clear understanding of the quite rich nature of our materiality definition and the way we would expect preparers to use it when making their materiality assessments. So for that particular reason, and that is Europe today, but we know Turkey is requesting that the standard would be applied already this year, Brazil in 26, and others are coming. And there is the voluntary uptake, as you mentioned, in particular here in the US and other markets. We felt it was important that that core conversation would be enriched through an educational material, which is here to explain what we mean by, for instance, the common information needs of investors. Ideas for explaining the link between a company's dependencies and impacts, its sustainability-related risks and opportunities, and its prospects. We also highlighted key aspects of the materiality concepts, including that companies identify their relevant risks and opportunities in order then to identify material information to disclose about these risks and opportunities. We went on describing the inextricable link, as we have put in S1, between a company's ability to generate returns for investors and its stakeholders, society, the economy, and the natural environment throughout its value chain, and also how information that is material might change over time. So through this educational material, we will reinforce that impacts and dependencies give rise or can give rise to sustainability-related risks and opportunities, and therefore are considered deeply on the ISSB standards because they can indeed be important factors for meeting the information need of investors. So it was a great discussion with board members, supportive of the direction staff are taking with this educational material. That was the board session this week. I'd also highlight to listeners that we have started the week with sharing a new webcast about industry-specific disclosures. Jindong, could you share what those are about?
Yes, our fellow board member, Elizabeth Seeger, presents a short webcast about why the ISSB decided to require industry-specific requirements within the ISSB standards, given investor demand. She also reflects on how we did this, including the role of the SASB standards as a source of guidance. Two investors joined Elizabeth, Richard Manley from CPP Investments. Richard chairs the ISSB Investor Advisory Group, and Takio Omori from Asset Management One. They set out why they think industry-specific requirements are an important feature of the ISSB useful, and also how they use this information in their investment decision-making. We also published new educational material about how to use the SASB standards to meet the requirements IFRS S1. This is part of our ongoing efforts to share educational material in targeted areas where we can provide application support. So that's our update from what has been a great and busy week in New York. Next week, Emmanuel, you go to Madrid?
I do, yes. There will be the IFRS Foundation Trustees meeting. Those are the trustees responsible for the strategy and governance of the foundation. They meet in Madrid next week, and I look forward to meeting with them to discuss the ISSB's latest developments and exciting plans for the future. Next month on the board, we will be back in Frankfurt to continue our work plan discussions. And I look forward to updating all of you, our listeners, on where we will be by then. Thank you.